nanohub.org.
Online simulation and more for nanotechnology.
Let's start by asking this question. We'll start with, yes. Maybe after this, we can then finish this. If maybe it'll be one of those questions. Why is ISUB called a thermometer for hot electron distribution? Why can you not simply measure hot electrons by looking at the drain current? Who wants to answer this question? Maybe we'll start from this side. Why couldn't you simply measure drain current? Remember, the hot electrons are coming out of the drain also. Why do you have to then get through this, get the substrate current?
I think the lifetime inverse proportional to gate current.
Yes.
And substrate current. And
but why did I directly go to the substrate current? Why couldn't I just stay with the drain current? And that's also related to the substrate current. Gate current. Right? So, you want to answer?
I think because of that high liquid field impact dimension will alter. So, you have to take that into.
That is true. That's true. Any other answers? I was thinking as.
The drain has some other components.
Exactly. Remember the drain had all these flying electrons, right? They were. But some were actually relatively cold electrons. I need to know the tail of the distribution can go over the gate. And that tail, only the ones that can impact ionize through the substrate, is sort of an indicator that it is hot. There are a lot of cold electrons sitting there, and drain current is contaminated by then a small fraction. You wouldn't measure. Even if you heated it, you wouldn't measure. So that's why it's a thermometer. ISUB is a good thermometer. ID is not a thermometer. What are the three methods for voltage acceleration? One is hydrodynamic, then?
Hydrodynamic and Monte Carlo and universal.
Right. These three things, if you know, then you can essentially read the entire literature. For last 30 years, whatever has been written, you should be able to understand it. They may not all do it this way, but you'll be able to understand it. If the theory is scaling universes, why not use it all the time? Who wants to answer this? Cannot go back. It's not written anywhere. Think about it. What do you need in order to construct the universal curve?
You might need measurements at high time.
No, but remember, I did it all those curves before universality was constructed. Was just about a couple of hours. But how many devices did I need? I needed at least couple of devices, right? Right? If I don't have couple of devices, one was already degraded. Mm-hmm. I cannot reuse that. So at least I need 4 and 5 to piece together the universal curve. Mm-hmm. Remember in the hydrodynamic theory, because I already know the voltage acceleration, mm-hmm. therefore I did not need more than one device. Of course, in order to verify the theory, you need many devices. Mm-hmm. So therefore, universality is good. But you need more devices. And you never know that when you are going to find how many you'll actually need to construct the universality. Right? More devices is the expense. How many devices, how many testing based on the hydrodynamic theory? So either how many?
One.
And do you have to do any degradation testing at all or not? Yes, the answer is yes, because you have to anchor the K, because remember, it's proportional to ISUB. But in order to how many are actually breaking the bond, there's a proportionality constant. So in order to get that K, the proportionality factor, you need to do one measurement, so to get that K. You can write these things down, and then when you look at it in notes, make sure you understand it, because I'm not going back to that slide. If the Monte Carlo simulation is so good, why doesn't everyone use Monte Carlo simulator to do lifetime testing? Who wants to?
It's generally difficult to do.
Yes. But the thing is that, think about it. First of all, the distribution itself is difficult. Do you understand what I'm saying? Let's say, you have a distribution like this, and your barrier is 3.1 eV. Right? Let's say. So this is energy, this is probability that a state is, or this is N of E. Density of state multiplied by, how many electrons here? So it will be E to the power, this is phi I, and KBTE, let's say T. Let's assume it's a lattice temperature. Do you understand how difficult it is? This is 3. And this is how much? 0.025. How many? Even in silicon band gap, going up in band gap, which is just 1 eV, tiny 1 eV, out of 10 to the power 22 electrons, only 10 to the power 10 goes up, right? That's the Ni. And now we are talking about 3 eV. So if there is no hot electron or nothing will go up, right? So therefore, calculation of this, when you are trying to put one electron at a time, you can, it's like a, such an unlikely lottery that you may sell 100 million tickets, but nobody, there's no winner. So how are you going to do physics if there's no, right? You understand this?
This E is not the lattice temperature.
I know. I'm just trying to say that even if it's 10 times, so let's calculate. How much is this? This is 440, this is 120. E to the power minus 120, even your MATLAB may complain. And even if you increase it by a factor of 10, even then it is 12. That's also, MATLAB will not complain, but that's, you can see, it's a difficult calculation. All right. Let me continue. Monte Carlo 6, who we assumed Ig is equal to Kf. What theory of silicon hydrogen did we use? Who wants to answer this question? Murtaza, you want to answer this question? Why is Ig is equal to Kf? And why is it inversely proportional? Remember? So this is one. I'm asking you this question, and let's see whether you can answer. I'm asking you that why is T naught is equal to Kf. I'm essentially asking you this question. Not proportional to, proportional to. It's a constant. Why is this? Is it true every time, do you think? Homework, have you started homework? Not yet.
No.
So I think you have to do the homework. Just I want to explain to you very briefly what is happening here. Remember that the hydrogen was diffusing out like that. And if I calculated the number NIT, do you remember that it came as KF N naught? When you solve for this cylindrical diffusion, KR. If you have your notes, you can also check with me. Right? Only for silicon hydrogen, right? If it were H2, then it would be different. Now, this is a constant when you have reached a certain defect level, right? And so, therefore, do you see these are all field independent? This is field independent. So, therefore, do you see Kf multiplied by T is a constant? Right? When you want to calculate the lifetime. So, T naught, that's the lifetime, that's the constant. And so, therefore, T naught is inversely proportional to Kf. I wanted to emphasize that because in many cases I use that and nobody complained. So therefore I want to emphasize that that's because I assumed hydrogen diffusing away from here. If that did not happen, if it were H2 or if it were silicon oxygen, then the time exponent and Kf wouldn't have the same dependency. Say, and then this would be a square or 3/2 or whatever. And it will not be the same. So, you have to be very careful, right, in these calculations. Okay. This is done. Origin of power exponent 2. Ryan, you want to say? Why is the Keldysh theory says origin of power exponent is 2? Keldysh theory has to say, do with impact ionization.
I guess it's because of the ratio of I and
No, the exponent is on the top. I'm talking about this one. I'm talking about this one. This one is 2. Why is it 2? The electron-electron involves what?
Okay, so electron-electron interaction involves... So in the impact ionization, it involves 4 states. So it's like 4... Square root of
E is density of state. So what you have to do in order to do this, Keldysh did this. So the first electron is at energy E1, second electron is at energy E2, third electron state must be empty, and the fourth energy state must be empty also, in order for this scattering to occur. So when you integrate over the density of state, you'll have to integrate E1, E2, E3, E4. And when you do the integration, then you can immediately see that there'll be 4 density of state factor that will float out. That's where the 2 comes from, because each one of them is a square root of E. Right? Density of state is square root of E. What is the impact ionization threshold for, you want to answer? What is the impact ionization threshold for gallium arsenide? Approximately. Is it equal to Eg or a little bit more?
Probably a little bit more.
It has to be more by the factor of the, what will be the higher? 0.5, so approximately it is, how much will it be? If it is at just 0.5, then it's 1.5 is gallium arsenide? 2.25, something like that, or 2. But it's slightly different because Me is very small in gallium arsenide. So it's not really, those two are not the same. If they are the same, then certainly 0.5. This is the barrier. This is the phi I. And so this is a little bit smaller, close to about, I would say, 1.6, 1.7. Right? You'll remember this. These are small things. Once you remember it from a physical perspective, you'll not forget. Otherwise, you'll have to always go back and look up in the book that what these things are. Now you can ask the question you had.
The question is, scattering plays an important role when we talk about uncarriers.
Right.
But for modern transistor, we don't have too many scatter.
Okay.
It's close to ballistic distance.
Yes.
You were telling us that hot carrying for modern transistor, because I didn't get that.
Right.
Why hot carrying?
When they talk about this, that the transistor is ballistic, actually the transistor is far from ballistic. I mean, in order to something, a channel to be completely ballistic, what you can show that 99.9% of the electrons has to go ballistic. Because the single one which scatters. So first of all, that the notion that there is no scattering is small, but scattering is very important in modern transistors. So I'll just tell you one thing, and then it's a very good question, and I will try to explain to you. This is the tragedy of the average. Assume that you have created a ultra-small semiconductor slab. And then, you are injecting electrons from here. Now, this is so small that you expect the electrons to go ballistic, more or less. So, let's say most of them are going like that. I have 4 here. Let's say 3 are going like that. And I, at the ratio I'm coming. But let's say one of them scatters. And then a fraction of them, I mean, here you see it's a large number. Then a fraction of them also scatters. What happens? That the very few that scatters will be loitering around in that region for a long period of time because their energy is small, they are low in the band state. And if you look at the channel electrons, you will see if you at a given snapshot, most of them are these slow moving electrons. It is like, you know, you start your high under university. Most students graduate in 4 years. They go out ballistic. And a few students, they like it very much. They got scattered once, get distracted, take new courses, then take new courses and new courses. When you ask that how many electrons I have, when you have trillions and trillions of them injected, you will find that yes, even when, and it's a very easy calculation, maybe I'll give it as a homework. Even when 99.9% is ballistic, it is still, the channel is still diffusive. And that if you look at the solution, the Boltzmann solution of this particular particular distribution, these would be the students who like it very much to stay in the university. And this would be the ballistic. Right? So there will be few who would be going ballistic, and the rest are essentially would be there. So therefore, that's why most companies still use drift diffusion solver when they design the latest transistors. How can you use drift diffusion solver when if it's a ballistic transistor? The reason you can do it, that although it looks ballistic, actually underneath, because of the slow-moving electrons, is more diffusive than ballistic. Right? And so then, of course, we are talking about these hot electrons getting scattered and say only a fraction getting injected. And universal scaling theory, don't ask this detailed question. It just shows you experimentally what is available. Yes.
So, first of all, if you increase the gain bias, the higher the gain bias for electric field, the more it is diffusive. This is one thing.
And higher the drain bias, more it's diffusive.
Yes.
Why is that?
More ballistic.
More ballistic, you mean? Yes.
More drain bias is diffusive.
Mm-hmm.
But the scattering probability or diffusive transport is very high near the contact.
Mm-hmm.
So, you are reducing the channel length, but you cannot avoid the contact.
That's right. That's another very important point, is that what he is saying, that let's say I have here, I can go from here to here, ballistic, but then I'll be scattered back. When they talk about ballistic transport theory, like Professor Lundstrom and others, when they talk about, what they mean is not something that doesn't scatter. What it means is that it scatters, but cannot go back. It scatters. Transmission coefficient is still 1. Because everybody who came in, you cannot go back. But it simply means that the current, therefore, you could have calculated the current simply by looking at this point, how many electrons were flying in. But if you look at the distribution here, then that distribution will have a huge diffusion component. Now, if you really want to do this, this is my PhD thesis. So you can read my thesis and see how all these little stories are about how the electrons flow in this structure. Those are laid out nicely. Okay.